Command Point now has merch. Link in the description.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again to Command Point. I am your host, Shane, and I'm here with my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
Hi, good.
It's a good day. It's a good day. How's it going for you? I mean, anything interesting?
What's interesting? I mean, we've been playing in a kill team league here that I've been running locally. That's pretty interesting. You and I, we played our game this week.
Yes, it was a heater.
It was a heater. It was a close one. It was, I played the Vetguard, and you played Felgor Ravagers on Into the Dark. We played Loot, and it was a close game. Final score ended up being 17-14, not including, like, the, you know, painted, because we're not counting that for this league, but...
Yeah,
really close game.
Yeah, it was a good one. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can talk more about it in a bit. The league has been pretty cool, though. It's, you know, getting the local league started is always a good time.
Yeah.
Especially because this is the first thing we've really done for a long time, and we've got like 15 people.
Yeah, 15 people in the league right now. So I mean, that's a great turnout.
Yeah, we're missing people that we know play as well. So there's actually a bit of a crowd in Rochester, which is really cool. Always, I mean, I find that pretty exciting.
Yeah.
We got a few things on the docket today. We're going to be talking a little bit about, I guess the core meat of the video today, we're going to be doing a great big, wonderful tech op deep dive, which I think is... something that is just not out there. I've like looked around to see, like, other than when CritOps came out and people talked about like stuff as it was new, there hasn't really been content made about, you know, what are good tech ops and what are bad tech ops. So I think that's a really interesting topic that I've been thinking a lot about as I, you know, explore different teams and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And today at the end of the episode, we're going to be doing our first weird boy and / knob Patreon Q&A, where we take questions from our some of our Patreon followers.
Excited for that.
Yeah, while we're at it, shout out to everybody on Patreon, the Grots, Knobs, and Weird Boys who are supporting us. We are going to have some content up for the Weird Boys soon of some of my games in the CPTS, which is going through week two right now. That's our... tabletop simulator tournament that we run in the Command Point Discord. So my games of that will be going up very soon, hopefully in the next day or two. And so I feel like there was something else I want to bring. Ryan, do you know what episode of the podcast this is? Because I always try to say that we start.
Episode 60?
I think we're in the 60s, right? We have to be in the 60s.
We're somewhere around there. Let me... double check here.
We can find this out. We have the technology.
Yeah.
Surely.
I can never remember. Last one we did was the Legionary Deep Dive.
We're at 58.
Okay.
This is episode 58. So almost at 60.
Yeah.
It feels like we've done more than that.
So
if I'm being honest.
So if you look up on I'm looking at our Spotify for Podcasters page. That's how we distribute our podcast. And it says we have 67 episodes, but that information is incorrect because a lot of those were the Crisis Point podcast.
Yes.
Take me back.
But, the good old days of like last year.
Yeah, literally.
So episode 58 of the Command Point podcast, how far we have come.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, I do want to make a quick shout out before we get into the main stuff. But I found out recently, I don't think I talked to you about this, Ryan, actually. Glass Half Dead is apparently he put out a video on his Patreon saying that he is like kind of stepping away from Kill Team pretty soon, like Kill Team content creation, like Glass Half Dead, the YouTube channel. And it had me thinking about like the when we started, it was like Glass Half Dead and Birenid.
And that was like pretty much it.
That was it.
Yeah.
And yeah, and now I mean Birenid stepped away a while ago and Glass is stepping away now. And it's like it just feels weird. I feel like they were like the Big Brother channels, you know?
They definitely were. They helped us out a lot, especially with, I guess, like boosting our signal. And then there was a lot of. Birenid took a lot of time to talk with me, especially about ways that we could grow the channel. Even stuff like how to make like a good like YouTube thumbnail, like good titles for videos, stuff like that. So yeah, that is a shame to hear that.
Yeah, and
But
Andy was he was always really willing to collaborate. That's Glass. He was always really willing to collaborate with us when we were like 500 subscribers.
yes. Yeah.
So shout out to those guys. Hope he's doing okay. Kill Team is definitely, I mean, we're fortunate in this day time, like this time period, there's a lot more content creators out there. It's not just us three and, you know, so the scene will be okay, but you know, really what's important is I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into news and notes really quick. We got some new stuff that was, it's not that new at this point. We're just slow.
Yeah.
But Games Workshop at, I don't know what it was, where they, was it LVO? It must have been LVO that
It
they
was
announced that.
LVO, yeah.
They revealed that the other half of the Kill Team Nightmare box on the other side from the Night Lords, or I guess it's Nightmare is the box and it has Night Lords in it.
Nightmare,
The other
nightmare,
team,
nightmare.
yeah, the other team is Mandrakes, Ryan. How do you
Yes.
feel about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty cool. That is an old model kit that definitely could have done with a plastic kit, so I'm happy that we're seeing them come out. And I know that Drakari players, even in like big 40K, have got to be excited for this new kit to come out. I have no idea how they're going to interact with, like, for those of you who don't know, who don't play 40K, Drakari are playable now. They were bottom of the barrel Shadow Realm tier. In terms of like the power rankings, but with their new like Sky Splinter detachment, they're actually playable now, and they did win a tournament sometime in the last 2 weeks. So you know, Drakari fans are they are feasting right now, and I know they are fiending for these new Mandrakes to come out.
So when I saw that team, you know the first thing I thought about, Ryan?
What's that?
Do you remember last edition when I played Drakari for a little bit and like my thing with Drakari was I just spammed
It was
Mandrakes?
literally Mandrake spam, yeah.
There's Mandrakes, and now I can do that again.
You
And
literally
I'm
don't have a
really excited.
choice. It is just
Yeah.
Mandrakes.
Which is great because I was doing that anyway. And it's exciting to see that. I mean, honestly, like I don't like speculating. But like I will say the models, I think they're gonna be hard to t if they're specialists and it's not like Blades of Kaim, they're gonna be hard to tell apart from each other because they all look the same to me.
They are, yeah.
But the models look cool, and that's really all that matters. So you can always like paint your specialists a little different if that's the case, but like who knows?
Yeah.
The team looks cool. I know you're excited about the Night Lords. I'll happily take the Mandrake half
For
and we can
perfect.
just
Perfect. I
we
want
can
nothing to
call it
do
a
with
day.
those. I don't understand the lore behind those models,
They're
honestly.
spooky. They're just really spooky.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but it's like they're Dark Eldar, but they're also like half demon or whatever. I feel like I just haven't dug too deep into that part of the lore, but I have no idea what's up with them. If you guys know, put it down in the comments section below so I don't have to go searching for that information. Greatly appreciate that. I
They're
will
just a bunch of
crowdsource
emo.
the 40K lore right now.
They're just a bunch of emo boys.
Yeah.
And it's not
Well,
just
that's
a
the
phase.
entire faction.
Oh yeah, but especially the Mandrakes, they've got the long flowing hair and
Yeah.
like the
Yeah.
goes over their eye. It's yeah. it's very emo-esque. Yeah. but anyway, that's pretty much all that's new. We, Ryan, are going to Adepticon, though.
Yes.
Which is yeah. less than a month away.
I'm excited. I'm
super excited. Yeah, I'm yep. thrilled. We are going to be there pretty much for the whole like week, basically, like from Wednesday until Sunday.
Yeah, we're going to be there Wednesday night through at least until Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, I will be playing in the pods and the GT and maybe doubles. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
I might just take Friday and walk around. But, and Ryan, you're playing in the GT.
I'm playing in the GT, yep.
Yeah, so guys, if you're going to Adepticon, come say hi. We're gonna be there sweating it out, having a good time.
Yeah.
Really excited. It's one of the ones that I've wanted to hit for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
Last year that was Nova, and I knocked that off the list, and this year it's Adepticon, so I've heard great things about it as a convention.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, I mentioned earlier the Command Point Tournament Series is ongoing. I wanted to touch on that a little bit before we moved on to like the meat of this episode. CPTS, I don't know what I said about it last time, but we actually had 115 players total for Command Point Tournament Series.
That's huge.
Crazy numbers. It's the most we've ever had for a TTS tournament. The most we had before was around 60. I think we're in the 60s, like low 60s, but we didn't dream of hitting like 80 even. That was way beyond.
Yeah.
Even back in the pandemic heyday,
yeah.
I think we hit like 64.
We hit like 64, and at the time, that was the biggest kill team tournament to ever happen, period, in real yeah. life or digitally.
Yeah. And to hit 115 out of nowhere with like, I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah. I think that just like, reflects how much growth Kill Team has had over this past year, I think, more than any other point. I think right now we are, I want to say, like in the golden age of Kill Team, and we just might not even know it. The balance yeah. with a few outliers, you know, for a lot of the teams is so, so good that a lot of teams are very viable. And it's just a, you know, it's a really well-designed game, I think, that a lot of people are enjoying and discovering.
Yeah, we're seeing it on the local level, as we mentioned earlier. Just the amount of players that are like just cropping up. It's yeah. so exciting. And there's, because when the edition came out, it was like, well, you can play Compendium, and then there's like these teams that are way better, and there's like four of them.
Yeah.
And that's like the whole thing. But here we are now, like 3 years in, and it's exciting. Like there's 24, there's about to be 26, I think, bespoke teams, 27 if you count Justian, which I don't.
The tier list, they just keep getting longer.
Yeah. But it's cool because now it's for a new player coming in, on one hand, you could look at it as kind of daunting. But I think if anything, it's felt easier to get players into it when I show them like, these are all the teams you could take. And they're all like very unique. They all have an identity. It's exciting. You know, the whole idea of like a bespoke team is a cool thing because it's this like kit that's like made just for our game.
Yeah.
And last edition, we basically didn't have that.
No.
Actually, you know, the original bespoke teams, really, were Gellerpox and Elucidian and Starstriders.
Yeah, that's true.
And I wonder
it's
now...
It's weird to think about.
Much, yeah, how much of like a test drive for second edition that was.
I think if we want to get technical about it, I think the Heavy Intercessors were also a bespoke team. Because originally you could only get those models through the Pariah Nexus box.
Yeah,
they weren't their
bit,
own
yeah.
individual kit until much, much later.
And now you can still play Heavy Intercessors.
Yeah, they're garbage. Don't do it. But
really bad.
It's a shame because I love those chunky boys.
Yeah, they're cool. But yeah, anyway, the Command Point Tournament Series is going on. We are in the second round. And I have been playing Hyrotech in it. And I just wanted to give a quick brief on my games. On the first week, I played against a lovely fella from He's actually from Buffalo, which is cool, really close to us. And he was running like all Tzeentch Chaos Demons. He had 12 pink horrors, which was just a crazy thing. And I got the win there. And on week two, so last night, I played my second game into, I believe it was Blades of Cain, which is one of my first. It was basically my first time playing against like a full Blades of Cain team. Like Ryan, you and I messed around with when you just had the Striking Scorpions.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, they are much more of a complete team when you have Dire Avengers and Banshees mixed in there too.
For sure.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I ended up winning that game, but it was on Into the Dark Loot, which I think is probably the last thing Higher Tech wants to see into that team. But I'm having a lot of fun with the Higher Tech circle. There's one play I wanted to highlight in this game. So on turn one, in deployment, I had on the right side on the Into the Dark flank, I had my Kryptek and the Despotech sitting on the right side, and they're both engaged. And I recon dashed the Kryptek, and I told my opponent about the maximum length that he could run and shoot his team on the deployment line. And so he took initiative because he wanted to prevent the Alpha Strike with the Kryptek.
Right.
And he's an 8-model team, and I'm an 8-model team. So when he takes initiative, I know I have last activation.
Yep.
So the real threat that I was actually setting up was the Despotech, who was right behind him, because that Kryptek could move and open the door, and you could Chronometron the Despotech and give him 3 APL. And from the deployment line, he can move dash 12 inches and shoot anybody on my opponent's back objective just from like where he was standing. And such a strong model because he rolls up. He's got 5 shots, hitting on 2s with lethal 5, 3-3 damage, mortal splash 1, and he gets a reroll because of his demand. And it's like you just walk up and get 5 hits and just kill whatever you shoot.
Love that.
Yeah, and it was a really tight game though. Came down to the very end with the TAC Ops. You run all the TAC Ops that score at the end of the game, and you just get 6 points and win if the board state looks okay. And yeah, no, I'm really enjoying the CBTS right now. We got a few more rounds left, so before it gets to top cut. So I guess we'll try to get some streams in once we hit to the finals, semifinals area.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely mentioned to you when you told me how many people had signed up for it. I'm like, I kind of want to throw it back to the pandemic days
Yeah,
and do
back when
some
we used to stream every
commentary
week.
at the very least for the finals.
Yeah, for sure for the finals. It's a lot of fun getting those streams together.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ryan, we're doing our local league too. We just played a game, Felgor versus Vekard on Into the Dark. That was a really good game.
It was
I had a
definitely
lot of
like,
fun there.
yeah, definitely. Even though I lost, you know, I felt like that was one of the best games that I've played in a. I think that was the best game I played in at least a while. I don't know, in terms of like how I played, my opponent's skill, and then just how the game itself played out. It was a very enjoyable experience.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the best game I've played since Worlds. It was like, because we're it also it was nice playing a game where we're both playing like the tippy top high tier teams other than Commandos.
Yeah.
And I think like we like to rag on the top tier teams a lot, but truthfully, I think like when you're seeing two of the best teams play into each other, it can be really interesting. It makes for like really like dynamic gameplay where it's very back and forth.
Yeah.
So yeah, but so far basically the way we're doing our league is you can switch your team up every week. It's 5 rounds, and I've been trying to play a different team each week. So the first week I played Hand of the Archon into Chaos Cults, and the second week I played Higher Attack into Void Dancers, and then it was Felgor this week into your Vekard. But Ryan, you've been going Vekard from week one, right?
Yeah. I really wanted
How
to
have you
just
been? Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say I really wanted to like buckle down and just like get like really good with a team because with the exception of Intercession, my confidence with kill teams has not been very high. I mean, I guess like Harlequins were kind of like, I don't know. I like messing around with Harlequins. I liked messing around with Hand of the Archon. Intercession was the only team that I felt like I had a firm grasp on, and that wasn't until after I had played them at the Kill Team Open last year or 2 years ago. I can't
Last year.
remember. Yeah.
Doesn't feel like last year. It feels like
No,
forever
it
ago.
feels like so long ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so I've been basically just like maining Vetguard for a while now, and I'm enjoying running them.
Yeah, I mean they're like the OG team, and it's been cool watching you play them.
Yeah, I finally
I'm
got
like,
them fully painted too, so
oh, there you go.
only
Even
took
the
me
hardened.
almost nope, he's not done yet. We'll have to get him done.
yeah, but no, I mean I've been really playing a lot of teams since the past like month or so. I've kind of been really intrigued by like higher tech. Obviously, I'm playing in CPTS. There's Hand of the Archon. I'm really tempted to play them at Adepticon. They are just so cool.
I love them.
And I said on I was on Squad Games last week, and I said, I think I said it on there, but I said this to somebody. I feel like Hand of the Archon is like the elf version of Legionaries, and it just speaks to me for some reason. Like they're just so killy, and like they're deceptively hard to kill themselves, and they have like a really cool toolbox.
Yeah, I can see it. They're spiky too. They got lots of spikes.
Very spiky.
Yeah.
So I've really been enjoying Hand of the Archon. Felgor is just so cool. I was really excited for Felgor when the team came out, and then I just didn't play them at all. So
Yeah,
I've
because
been
it
a
was
little.
like, did they, I'm trying to remember, did they like get nerfed right off the bat?
Yeah, they got nerfed right away, and then they got buffed, and then
And then they got nerfed again.
I
And
think,
now they're buffed
yeah,
again.
something like that.
It's
They've at least been buffed and nerfed.
multiple times.
And they're so fun. They really are so fun.
I think they're in a cool spot right now after playing against them.
They probably need a little nerf, but definitely a fun team to play as, in my opinion. And then beyond that, I mean, I don't know. There's so many teams. Like, I even want to play Legionaries again. Not seriously, but just like I kind of miss playing them.
Yeah.
And these new teams coming out just look cool. Like, I
Yeah.
just want to have them on the table.
You said you put the legionaries down, Shane. You can't go back on your word.
I
It's
know,
not
but they're
allowed.
so fun. They're so fun, though.
Yeah, they are.
You know, I actually, and Dakota was showing me stats of Legionaries in the past 3 months.
They're
42% win rate.
holding.
Come on, guys. What are we doing? It's a shame. It's an absolute shame.
Look at how they massacred our boys.
But yeah, no.
Hopefully, Night Lords can take up the Chaos Mantle, and
Somebody's gotta.
somebody's there has to be a good elite team out there, right?
I guess, yeah. I mean, I think Legionaries are still pretty good. It's just, I don't know what people are doing out there. But all right, let's get into the main meat
Yes.
of the video here, the great, big, wonderful Tac Op deep dive. So I kind of just wanted to go over the all the Tac Op cards that we have since Crit Ops 2022 came out, and just kind of go over them because I guess give them a grade, not like an official grade, but like
Yeah.
because some of these there are attack ops in this thing that I think are all pretty much never takes.
Yes,
There's a
100%
few,
agree.
and I think just knowing the things that you shouldn't take is really helpful in and of itself.
Yeah, it takes out a lot of the decision points, especially if you're a newer player using the 2022 Crit Ops pack. So for context, or I guess before we get into this, we are just going to be discussing the four archetypes, right? We're not going to be delving into every single collection of faction Tac Ops this
Yeah, no, I
episode.
don't. I think we can do that in a later episode. Although I do
Yeah.
think you could go over it quickly just by saying which is the one.
Oh yeah. No, that is very true. Most teams are like, there's only one that you should take, and usually it is an auto take, but I think we should save those for potentially some faction deep dives.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
What archetype do you want to start off with?
Well, let's start at Seek and Destroy, because I feel like that's the one that I'm the most familiar with, that everybody's the most familiar with. That's
the good one.
It is the good one. So let's get the easy stuff out of the way first. So honestly, I think that... let me actually pull it up, because I just realized I'm looking at the old ones. Here we go.
Oh, no.
yeah, I just saw Challenge. Do you remember Challenge?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I don't.
Challenge was the worst tac op ever.
That's why I don't remember it.
It was like you'd have to say your guy and then say the enemy guy, and then that guy had to kill that guy, and everybody knew right at the start of the game. It was like the worst thing ever.
Yeah, and your opponent was under like no obligation to actually come out and fight your chosen model, right?
Correct.
So yeah, it's like, what is the point? Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about the current stuff.
Yeah, so honestly, I think that Seek and Destroy is probably the best overall deck. Like, and obviously this is all team dependent, but I think there's not a truly bad Seek and Destroy tac op. There's like all six of these have a place. So first up, we have Executioner. Basically, you reveal it at the target reveal step of any turn, and you pick one of your guys to be your executioner for the game. And then at the end of each target reveal step going forward, including this one, you pick an enemy for your executioner to kill. And if he kills them, you get a point. And then if you kill another guy that you nominate later, you get another point. So this one is, I think it's, there's some teams that will just never take this.
Yeah.
But I think that there are some teams that also really like it. So this is like a really good one for... I've found that teams that have like really asymmetrical like shooting choices and like one really good gunner can really like abuse this a little bit. Like I've used this with Phobos against like horde teams and having like the marksman like, pick a guy, and then you could have like another Phobos guy omni scramble them so they can't move them. And then you kill them before they can run away with your executioner, and then hide, and then next turn you do it again. So situations like that, I think it's good. And you could also nominate like a total melee monster to just, you know, munch a guy, and then next...
Yeah. The first thing that popped into my head was the Possessed?
The Anointed?
Yes, the Anointed, the Legionary Anointed.
Yeah, he probably could do it a lot, like pretty easily. I personally never take it, but I'm sure if I did against certain teams, I would be able to max it. But you just have to keep in mind the one thing with this tac op is like a lot of players I see, they'll reveal their executioner, they'll get that one kill, but then they don't have like any game plan for getting the second point. They just get that one kill, and then their executioner's got a huge target on his back, and it dies before the next turn.
Yeah.
So you have to be really cognizant of that, and I think it's a team that really rewards having a plan, or it's a tac op that really rewards having a plan when you pick it. Like, how do you plan on scoring this? How do you plan on not just getting the one point on it, but getting that second point on it as well? So solid, worth taking sometimes, but there's other ones in here. So Ryan, Headhunter.
Yes.
Go over that one.
So, Headhunter, you must reveal this tac op when an enemy leader operative is incapacitated. You score one victory point, and if it's the first or second turning point, you score another victory point. So that's kind of interesting. You know, those last two turns of the game, you know, you got to kill the enemy leader, turns one or two. So realistically, you're probably going to be able to get your shot turn two. There are some teams that you want to take this against almost automatically. For example, pretty much any elite team, because elite teams, they cannot really, afford to just have their leader, model just sit in their backfield and just hide. They have to get in and they have to scrap and they have to trade. So, taking Headhunter against teams like that is always a good choice.
Yeah, and you get to see like what your opponent's team is before you pick Tac Ops. So like say you're playing Void Dancers and they gave the fusion pistol to their leader. You know that guy's moving up on the
He's,
second
yep.
turn to try and kill something. So Headhunter's really good there. As a Legionary player, Headhunter is very good against Legionaries because my Aspiring Champion gets in the mix on turn two. Like you said, I think Intercession is another good one. Sometimes the leader for Intercession is a shooty guy, so maybe it's not as free. Same for
Yeah.
Phobos. Like, if their leader is a Reaver Sergeant, there you go. It's probably a good take. But against teams like Chaos Cult, where the leader just sits in the back, don't ever take
No.
Headhunter. You'll probably get the 1 point out of it if you win the game, but it's not gonna like make a difference, and you're not gonna get 2 points on it unless they're like very, very greedy with their leader and misplay. It's ultimately out of your control at that point. So definitely against teams with really aggressive leaders, especially elite teams. Maybe against something like Elucidia and Starstriders. The Elucia Vayne is pretty aggressive, but I'd stick to the elite teams when taking this one.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Assassinate Target. This is another good anti-elite choice. You reveal it in the first turn. Your opponent selects one of their guys, and then you have to kill them. So again, it's an elite choice, really. And this one, I don't even think I would take this against like Void Dancers. I would only take this against a team with six models or less,
Yeah.
where you don't expect them to, like, you expect all hands on deck, right? When you're playing an elite team, you need everybody involved. So, and unlike Headhunter, this one, you don't have to get it in the first two turns. You just have to get it, period.
Yeah.
So, if you're taking Seek and Destroy, you probably already are running a team that's decently killy. And you have the capability to kill something that you really, really want to kill if you allocate resources to it. So against an elite team, I think Assassinate Target is a really good choice.
Yeah.
Eliminate Guards, Ryan?
Yeah, so you can reveal this TAC op in the target reveal step of any turning point. Once you do so, at the end of each target reveal step, select an objective marker on the center line or within your opponent's territory, then select one enemy operative within two circle of it to be the guard for the turning point. If the enemy operative you selected to be the guard for the turning point is incapacitated during the same turning point, you score one VP, and if you achieve the first condition in any subsequent turning points, you score another VP.
Yeah, so this one is very good. It's one I took every game at Worlds with my Legionaries, and I never didn't max it. It's worth noting, I think that it's taken maybe more than it should, though. I think a lot of people just auto take Eliminate Guards because there's six objectives and your opponent's going to stand on them. But you could hypothetically, for instance, if you're playing against a 3 APL team and you're on like loot or secure, then your opponent has some control over that. Especially if you reveal it and then you get your kill. A good player will know maybe to keep their operatives off of objectives if possible. And you could be in a situation turn three or four where there's literally nobody for you to choose as your guard. Or if there's one guy, it's maybe not a good choice because they're so far away, they're on like a back point. So be careful with Eliminate Guards because you can get punished for it. On Capture, it's really good because they have to stand on it
Right.
to control it. Against 2 APL teams, a lot of the time they don't have the ability to do the mission action and get off the point. They're going to have to move on to the point and do it. So if they want to score primaries and get an advantage on primary, then you can punish them for that with Eliminate Guards. So, it's very good. Just give it some thought before you take it.
All right.
Robin Ransack. I think this is my favorite one.
I think this one, in my opinion, is like the best one from this entire deck.
If you're playing a melee team, a team with
Yes,
melee,
yeah.
of course. So basically, you reveal it when you incapacitate an enemy operative in engagement range, so it has to be in melee, and the guy that you killed, or the guy that got the kill, is more than 3 inches from other enemy operatives. So there's a lot of first of all, it's hidden until you reveal it, which is great.
Yeah.
You get a kill anywhere on any guy, and you need to make sure your guy is more than 3 inches from any other enemies. So you have so much agency in this. There's nothing your opponent can deliberately do to stop you unless they have snuffed out that you're running Robin Ransack. And even then, it's hard for your opponent to make it impossible for you to like not score this, because you ultimately have the choice to position your model outside of 3 inches from another guy when you get that kill. And basically, you get a point right when you score it, and then you get the second point if that guy lives till the end of the game. If you're running a team with really good melee into your opponent, this is a almost auto take with Seek and Destroy, I would say.
Yeah.
It's obviously, it can, you know, with horde teams like Blooded, where the models die really easy, there's a little bit of danger, but you can just, you can reveal this like turn four, like last act, you know, and then they don't have the chance to kill him potentially, just like hypothetically. Really good. Really, really good tack op. Would recommend. So, and then route, Ryan.
Yeah, so with route, you can reveal this tack op in the target reveal step of any turning point. If an enemy operative is incapacitated by a friendly operative and that friendly operative is within 6 of your opponent's drop zone when it does so, you score 1. If you achieve the first condition in any subsequent turning points, you score another. So get up the board, get within 6 of your opponent's drop zone, and then get a kill.
Yeah.
Pretty achievable.
Again, yeah, like Robin Ransack, you have a lot of agency here because it just needs to be your guy within 6. Like, it, the guy that you're killing doesn't even need to be within 6 of their drop zone. It's just as long as you get over it. Like, you can tiptoe into their, into within 6 inches of their drop zone and shoot a guy with a plasma, like, across the map, and you'll get that point for route. And it also is nice with melee teams in particular that getting into that part of the board and killing things is your game plan anyway. So this is like the most passive to score, I think, in the whole deck. Even Robin Ransack, you have to think about it a little bit when you reveal it. But route, I think you could just slam this down and just play and not even think about it, and you'll score it. So very, very, very good. So Ryan, that was Seek and Destroy. That's the easiest one to do because you can basically say they're all good,
yeah,
in certain situations. We're going to start moving into some of the tougher ones now. Let's go to security, because you've been playing Vetguard a lot. I've been playing
Hierarch
a lot.
Yeah.
So we've both been running security. I want to start with Seize Ground, because this is a very common one.
All right.
So basically, you just reveal it in the first turn. You pick a heavy terrain feature that is more than 3 inches from your drop zone. And at the end of the game, if you have any guys that control it, so are standing within 1 inch of it, you get a victory point. They have to control it, though, so you have to have more APL than the enemy within 1 inch of that objective. And to get the second point, you need to have no enemy operatives within 1 inch of it, and you need to have at least 4 APL controlling it. So I have come to find, I'll end up taking Seize Ground often when I play security, but lately as I play it more, I'm moving away from it a little bit. Not taking it out of my options entirely, but basically not taking it as often and not making it like an auto take, because I found that that second point is really easy to deny for your opponent. Like, they just need one guy alive to just book it towards that objective,
yeah,
or towards that terrain feature, and then they're robbing you of your second point. So I think the way to do this the best, if you are taking it, and for a while I would put it on a central piece of terrain, because then my guys from both sides could flood to it at the end, but that also goes for the other team. So I would advise not doing that. Mm-hmm. I would pick a terrain feature on a flank,
yeah,
that you're intending to like win, like where you have your power, yeah, pieces on that flank. You're going to crush the team on it, that
just
side.
Like overload that.
Yeah.
Almost.
I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Be very cognizant of it throughout the game, because if things start going bad on that side of the board, you might need to move more resources over there to like preemptively get ready to control it. And like, basically you need to wipe out the enemy on that side of the board, or else they're going to stop you from getting 2 points on it. So be careful with seized ground. It's not as easy, I think, as some people think.
Yeah.
Ryan, do you want to go over central control?
Sure. Yeah. So, I also want to bring up before we move past seize ground and central control, this one as well. These TAC ops are not allowed on, seize ground is not allowed in close quarters. That one is replaced with, I think it's secure access point, right?
Yes, and which is...
It's basically the same thing, except it needs to be either on the doorway needs to be on the center line, or it has to be in your opponent's territory, mm-hmm. Which is I achievable on some maps.
Yeah. I actually think it's slightly easier if you can get a decent door, because that thing I'm talking about where you just try to win a flank, it's easier to do on Into the Dark.
Yeah, if you have an access point on the center line on Into the Dark, it's like just overload that flank and win that, and you're good. That's an almost an auto take if you have a board like that. In our game, Shane, none of the doors on that board were on the center line. They were all in your territory, and I knew that I was probably not going to be able to move past your tide of Felgor Ravagers and survive, so I opted to not take that one.
And that was the right choice, I
yes,
think.
Yeah. Central control, this one is not allowed in hazardous areas. So if you're playing on Beta Decima, you cannot take this one. This is replaced with, I think it's secure the top of the Ferrotonic Furnace. I think that's the one.
Yeah, it's something like that.
And then another thing about Seize Ground, I keep going back to this. Seize Ground, you can still take that on hazardous areas, on Beta Decima.
Yep.
And if you don't know, literally every single terrain feature, every single gantry and the Ferrotonic Furnace on that board all have a part of them that have the heavy trait. Yep. So that one's like to me, that's an auto take if you're playing on Beta Decima, but there's a lot of weird things going on with Beta Decima. I'm not necessarily convinced that it is a good choice for competitive play, so let's move on. So central control. You can reveal this TAC op in the target reveal step of any turning point after the first. At the end of any turning point, if the total APL of friendly operatives within square of the center of the kill zone, within square of the center of the kill zone and not on a vantage point, is greater than that of enemy operatives, you score 1 VP. If you achieve the first condition at the end of any subsequent turning points, you score another VP. So this is one that I actually did take in our game, and I think it worked out pretty well. I wound up maxing it.
Yeah, I think this one and Secure Center Line, which we're going to talk about soon, they fall into a similar pattern as far as when you want to take it. I think that these are TAC ops that are very good if you have more bodies than the other team, because you're going to have last activation and you can like run a guy in and guarantee it after everything else has happened. And I think in general, if you're a team with a lot of APL, I think these are good. Any of these control ones are good. I personally hate taking both of those. This one in center line with like higher attack, for instance, because higher attack only has like 17 APL on the whole board.
Yeah.
Compare that to Vetguard, who has like 28, 29 with comms.
Something like that,
It's not even close. So it's like, these horde teams that can take security, I think, are the teams that are going to gravitate to central control and center line. And then I want to talk now about hold them back. So hold them back is, this is the first one that we're hitting that I'm going to say, candidly, don't take hold them back.
Yeah.
It is not good. You will never score it, usually, if your opponent's paying a little bit attention, even. So basically, you reveal it in any turn after the first. If you could reveal it on the first turn, maybe getting 1 point would be possible. Sometimes, even then, it would be tough. But you reveal it after the first turn, and then there has to be no enemy operatives wholly within your territory. If even one enemy operative squeaks into your territory, I guess they have to be wholly within, but if they get in, you don't get a point. So obviously if you're out activated, don't take this. in my opinion, even if you aren't out activated, don't take this. It's way too easy to deny on the other side. So this is our first F. If we were grading them, hold them back gets an F. Back when it was hold the line and you just had to keep them out of 6 inches of your DZ, that was doable. That was solid. I liked that one. This version with the territory stuff, forget about it.
Yeah.
Right. And did you want to talk about secure centerline now?
Yeah, we can talk about that one. So you can reveal this TAC op in the target reveal step of any turning point after the first. At the end of any turning point, if the total APL of friendly operatives on the center line and not on a vantage point is greater than that of enemy operatives, you score 1 VP. And if you achieve the first condition at the end of any subsequent turning points, you score another VP. So I guess kind of to echo what you were saying earlier, you know, if you're a horde team, you know, and you know you're going to have last act, you can just run a guy up right onto the center line of the board and probably score that for you. And also, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this one, in a way, I think is better than Central Control as well. Because has this hidden little buff where even experienced players forget that this is on the board all the time. It's so hard to remember to play against center line.
It literally happened in our game.
Yeah, it's so easy to forget. I forget it all the time when I play against it. And you're going to have games where you get points off this just because you remembered your attack op and your opponent didn't.
Yep.
Central control is a little easier because, first of all, it's been around longer, and I think it's like a more centralized area to like your opponent's going to notice that you're setting up for central control.
Yeah.
But they might not notice that you slipped a guy into the center line while you were doing something else. So I think this is a really good one.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I think if you're playing on Into the Dark, there are some boards where it's a lot harder to score. But I think it's still very good. And I also think that it's better than central control for the most part, just because you have a wider area that your opponent has to be cognizant of.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to deny you scoring this one, whereas with central control, they can just put bodies. You can put two legionnaires in the center of the board. I mean, not that you usually would want to in order to deny. And I would have to throw three veteran guardsmen there just to contest it. So it's like,
well, there is some truth to it, though, because like if you're clustering up your models into the middle, I can like reach them all with like one guy. You know what I mean? Whereas,
right.
I can't have somebody on center line duty. It's got to be like I have to be paying attention to it with every operative because one guy on one side of the board can't deny you on the other side of the board. If I've already activated all my guys on one side and you haven't, you could like almost guarantee like with those guys that are left, just run them onto the center line and I can't stop you unless I overwatch.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about protect assets next.
Okay.
This is a really interesting one as far as it is good, but you need to know when to take it. If I'm playing a team that has decent killing ability, which, I mean, most teams of security have decent killing ability. The time to take protect assets is if they have 12 models, take it. If they don't have 12 models, don't take it. It's as simple as that. It's harder to get this against non-hordes, but against hordes, they have so many bodies, they're flooding the board. You can get protect assets very easily. Basically, you just have to kill two guys on an objective marker during a turn and then do it again. Anything less than 12 bodies, I feel like you're not going to ever get this reliably. But against like that guard with 14 bodies, you can do that.
Yep.
Kroot with 12 bodies, you can do that. Inquisition with 12 bodies, you can do that. Blooded, for sure. So those are the teams you take this against, stuff like that. Chaos Cult, no-brainer, Gellerpox. Although actually, Gellerpox, some of those guys you can't get tech ops for, so be careful with that. Like the Griblies.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that one's simple. It's really straightforward. It's kind of like how I talked about Route, how you can do it almost passively if you're into the right team. So there you go. And I think all we have left, Ryan, is Escort Operative.
Yeah. So you can reveal this TAC op In the target reveal step of the first or second turning point, you select one friendly operative. At the end of the battle, if that friendly operative is wholly within your opponent's territory, you score one VP. If that friendly operative is within six of your opponent's kill zone edge, you score one VP. So, I mean, this one, I would argue, can be weak for most teams.
It's a tough one for some teams.
I think, in my experience, this is the one that I find the most difficult to score out of everything here, except for Hold Them Back, of course. That one's literally challenge level impossible.
Yeah. So I have been playing this. The interesting thing here is I pretty much auto take this tech up with higher tech if I'm running security. They're really good with it because you can pick your escort in the second turn and he can literally get killed and come back and score it for you.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So teams like that, I think it's really good. In general, I know that Dan from the UK, when he played Navis Breachers, he would run escort operative a lot with his leader. Because his leader would, for the most part, be kind of just chilling in the back, not doing anything. And then on turn four, on turn three, he could start to move him up the board. And on turn four, you know, keeping him concealed, run him and score that tac op at the end. So I think if you have like a really passive guy that like just sits back and doesn't do a lot, you could hypothetically run it. It's not usually going to be your best choice unless you're playing higher tech, in which case it's amazing. But yeah, so I'd rank that one below central control and protect assets and secure center line.
Yeah.
But again, it's probably better for a wider team that can afford to like have a guy hide all game and then creep forward at the end.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to that does it for security, Ryan. Which one do you want to talk about next?
Let's talk about recon. Just because I think I have more experience with recon than I do infiltration. Infiltration.
I think that's normal. I think that's what most people think.
Yeah, yeah. We'll start. We'll do recon now. All right. So let me go ahead and start with everybody's favorite recover item.
Ooh, yeah.
So recover. Really good. Yeah. Recover item. You must reveal this tac up in the target reveal step of your first turning point. Place one of your item tokens within your opponent's territory. Please note that it does not state wholly within. The pickup action can be performed by friendly operatives, but not enemy operatives, upon your item token. At the end of any turning point, if a friendly operative controls your item token, you score one VP. Note that it says controls and not has picked up or is carrying. And if you achieve the first condition at the end of any subsequent turning points, you score one VP.
Yeah, so obviously some teams are better at this than others, but generally speaking, any team can score this.
Yeah.
Pretty easily. Like you said, it only needs to be basically effectively like by millimeters. It's effectively just sitting right on the center line in the middle of the board. And you can control it from 2 inches away. So you can be well in your territory controlling this, for starters. So it's really easy to get on it. And if you can pick it up, then you guarantee control it as long as the guy doesn't die. There are some teams with dogs like Kroot or Star Striders or
Exaction Squad. Can the Cyber Mastiff do it?
Well, I think Exaction doesn't.
Oh, do they
recon.
Even have recon? Yeah.
Yeah. But like Kroot and Star Striders in particular, their dog can like just run and pick it up and run away. And it's just like the easiest two victory points you're going to get.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, a lot of the time, it's going to be the easiest two victory points you'll ever get. If you're playing against a team that can't do like some dog stuff or like run and pick it up really easily, you can deny recover item. You just need to think about it. You need to like plan for it. It takes effort from your opponent to do so, but they can if you're not like really making sure you get the pickup on it. because they also just got a Remington 2 event. They're going to be like a tiny bit closer technically. But yeah, I mean, it's probably the best tac op in the game, right?
Yeah.
I don't think anything's better. I think some of the Seek and Destroy stuff is really good, but this probably takes the cake.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do, I'm going to talk about Outflank.
Okay.
You can reveal this tac op in the target reveal step of any turning point. So I hate Outflank. Honestly, this is the next one I'm going to say just don't ever take. I see people take this sometimes and they never score it and then they hate it. So basically, you need to control both neutral kill zone edges, and you get a victory point. Controlling both neutral kill zone edges, though, is difficult because the total APL of friendly operatives within 3 inches of the neutral kill zone edge has to be greater than your opponent's. So that's both kill zone edges. And you don't even count for controlling it unless you're more than 6 inches from your drop zone. So you have to almost get up to the center line to even get APL on the kill zone edge. And then you need it on both sides. And then you need to have more than your opponent to get 1 point. And then you have to do it again. So I don't think I need to explain why this is horrible, right?
Yeah. Challenge level, impossible.
I think I'd rather take hold them back, honestly.
Yeah.
This just sucks. Don't take this.
Nope.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, sure. So let's go ahead and talk about Surge Forward. You can reveal this tac op in the target reveal step of any turning point. At the end of any turning point, if the total APL of friendly operatives within 6 of your opponent's drop zone is 4 or more, you score 1 VP. If you achieve the first condition at the end of any subsequent turning points, you score 1 VP. So, I mean, this one's all right.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, if you're playing a really aggressive team with a decent amount of APL, I mean, it's not even the APL, really. It's just if you're playing a really aggressive team,
yeah,
that's going to be pushing into your opponent's side of the board. If the game's going well, you will just score this naturally, I think.
Yeah. So what teams, in your opinion, kind of fit that archetype that want to be playing Surge Forward?
I think Void Dancers are really good at it.
Yep.
What other team? I'm trying to think of the other recon teams. I think that Star Striders can do it pretty well. I'm like totally blanking on the recon teams. Hand of the Archon can. Any of the elf teams can take this.
Yeah.
And do well, I think. It's not necessarily always going to be the best choice, especially depending on the team you're playing against. Like, if you're playing against a really, like, a Felgor or a Chaos Cult, don't bother.
Yeah.
You know? But against, like, gunline teams where you're closing the distance on them, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Pathfinders can take this?
Actually, yes. Pathfinders, they are themselves a gunline, and they're not, like, closing the gap between them and their opponents. But what they are doing is, like, basically just wiping their opponent off the board in the first two turns and then just moving up and taking the points. So
yeah.
It actually, unironically, is a good play to try and table your opponent and score Surge Forward.
All right.
Next up, we're going to do Courier. So you reveal this in the target reveals type of any turning point and select one guy to be your courier.
That's for so the good.
Game. Basically, at the end of any turn, if you're within 6 inches of your opponent's drop zone, you get a point and then do it again. So you don't really, I would advise revealing this turn 3.
Oh, 100%.
Because, you know, by then, that's 2 less turns your opponent has had to kill the courier. You get to pick it on the spot, seeing the board state, and then you just got to keep that guy within 6 of the drop zone. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. I think it's a good tac op.
Yeah.
I love it with higher tech as well, for the same reason I like Escort Operative, because your courier can die, come back, and score it again. So go ahead with the next one, Ryan.
Yeah, I think we do have 2 left. Let's talk about Secure Vantage. Secure Vantage, notably, is not allowed in close quarters. This one is replaced by, I believe it's Secure Unexplored Rooms, which, depending on the map you get on your Into the Dark board, can be very, very good.
Really good.
So Secure Vantage. You can reveal this TAC op in the target reveal step of any turning point after the first. At the end of any turning point, if you control a vantage point that is more than square from your drop zone, you score 1 VP. And if you achieve the first condition with a different vantage point at the end of any subsequent turning points, you score 1 VP. Friendly operatives control a vantage point if the total APL of friendly operatives on it is greater than that of enemy operatives. So, I think in a vacuum, this is it's good. It is achievable, but it is very map and team dependent, I think. Void Dancers love this one just because everybody has fly on that team natively. Pathfinders, I think, like this one a lot too. However, if you find yourself to be playing on a map like Chelnath, where there are literally only two vantage points, this one can actually, depending on where those vantage points are set up, it might be unachievable for you. So, you got to pay attention to how many vantage points you have on your board and how many you think you can reasonably get to by the end of the game.
Yeah, that one is very turn dependent. I find a lot of boards don't make this easy. But as we mentioned earlier, secure unexplored rooms. Check and see if it's possible first. And if it is, just take it.
It's an auto take if it's possible, yeah.
All right. Next up we have, I think this is the last one here, is Plant Transponder. Basically, reveal it in any turning point after the first. And you have to do the Plant Transponder mission action to get a point, and then you have to do it in another turning point after, and you get a second point. So the Plant Transponder action, basically, you have to be wholly within their territory, your opponent's territory, more than circle from any terrain features, including barricades. Basically, anything, unless it is insignificant, then you can ignore it. And then you pay an APL and plant a token underneath the operative as close as possible. And you also, I believe, when you do the action, you can't place it within 6 of the other transponder token. And you can't do it within engagement range.
Right.
So this one, I mean, this is another one where a lot of boards lately are pretty dense with terrain. There's like a lot of terrain. This can just be like impossible. I mean, it's just asking so much. Like, you have to be out in the open. You have to pay an APL. There needs to even be a spot out in the open that's more than 3 inches from any terrain. And then you need to be there. So, like, unless you're a 3 APL guy that's moving out, doing it, and like dashing back, you're going to be out in the open after you do it. So I really don't like Plant Transponder. Some teams that can do free mission actions, like Phobos, can get away with this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that's always their best choice, though. So it's like, it's not nearly as bad as Outflank or, you know, Hold Them Back, but
this is another one tough. Where it's like, avoid.
Yeah, I would generally avoid this. But yeah, we can move up into Infiltrate now, Ryan, the one that is least taken by players. And I think for decent reason. I think it's definitely the worst of the archetypes. And some of these are just awkward. But let's start with Gather Surveillance, because I think Gather Surveillance is one of the few that's decent here.
Okay.
Basically, you reveal it in the first turn. You can do it any turn, but normally you'll do it on the first turn. And then at the end of each target reveal step, you select one friendly operative to gather surveillance. So it's a different guy you select each turn. So it doesn't have to be like you pick one guy and that's your guy for the whole game. And basically at the end of the turn, the guy that you picked has to have a conceal order and be wholly within your territory and more than 3 inches from enemy operatives. On teams with a lot of activations, this is pretty good because you can have him go last. The best I've seen with this is the Commando Grot, just ziplining across the board and just like hiding in a corner. He can be really hard to deny that from. You just have to be careful because, again, the second point can be tough if you're not safe with the guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, not a terrible one. You got a little agency there.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go next?
Yeah, so we'll do Implant. You can reveal this tank op when a friendly operative would strike an enemy operative in combat. Instead of inflicting damage on an enemy operative from that strike, you can implant that operative. That operative does not lose any wounds from that strike, and you score 1 VP. And if two other enemy operatives are implanted as above, you score another VP. So sometimes I'll see factions like Kroot take this one into, let's say they're playing against like an elite team. You know, chances are you're not going to be able to kill something in combat, but at least this way you're getting something out of it, that being victory points.
Yeah. Some teams will take implant and they'll max it, but they'll like lose so much attrition that it wasn't maybe worth it.
Right.
But some teams like Kroot, where they're not killing anything anyway, I like this a lot. It's probably the best tech op in the archetype, I would argue.
Yeah, I think so. It's very achievable.
Yeah, against a melee team, especially where they're going to charge you and stuff, really good. Or, you know, with some teams, you can like, you'll have guys with just a million attacks and you like, you'll be able to kill what you're fighting and implant against teams with bad melee because you just parry them out.
Yep.
So yeah, I implant's good. We're going to do stalk target next.
All right.
Reveal it in the target reveal step of any turning point, and then at the end of each target reveal step, you select one enemy operative to be stalked for the turning point. Basically, then, at the end of any turning point, if a friendly operative that is concealed is within 3 inches, but not engagement range of the operative you selected to be stalked, you get a point, and then you have to do it again. So this is good for teams, for situations where you have a lot more activations than your opponent. It's good against an elite team with like a horde, because you can very easily get the stalk set up just by like moving a like a dork up at the end of the turn and just like standing there a little bit nearby. And like it's like a neophyte hybrid. You don't care if he dies next turn, he got you a victory point. So stalk target is definitely doable. It does ask you to do like pretty awkward things sometimes, so I don't love it, but it's absolutely doable in certain matchups. Like I said, basically against teams that you out activate by a lot.
Yeah. All right, so let's take a look at C's defenses. You can reveal this tac op in the target reveal step of any turning point. At the end of any turning point, if you control an opponent's barricade, you score 1 VP. If you achieve the first condition at the end of any subsequent turning points, you score 1 VP. And friendly operatives control a barricade if the total APL of friendly operatives within one of it is greater than that of enemy operatives. I don't hate this, but like I don't like it. I don't like it enough to take it.
Yeah, I think it's okay.
It's so dependent on where your opponent is setting up the barricades.
Yeah, what's tough is you have to pick the tac op before you even know where the barricades are.
Yeah, yeah.
I've played games before where I know my opponent might take infiltration, and I just deployed my barricades in my deployment zone, like in the back corners, because on the off chance that they took that tac op, now they just can't score it.
Yeah.
So that could always happen. So if this is like a core part of your game plan, people are going to catch on at a tournament and they'll start hiding their barricades. But you know, against, if you're like a melee team and your opponent is probably going to want to use those barricades to like block you off, that can inadvertently kind of work into your favor if you take this. So yeah. It's not terrible, but
yeah.
Again, not a lot of agency here. I'm going to do subversive control next. Basically, you have to reveal it in the third or fourth turn. And at the end of the third turn, if you control an objective marker in your opponent's territory and not on the center line, so the middle of it can't be on the center line. Some of these, they'll like the 2-inch bubble crosses into the center line, but that you can score subversive control on that as long as the center of the objective isn't on the center line. You'll get a victory point, and then you need to do it again in the fourth turn. So, like, this is, like, honestly not too bad, because you, I believe you can do it on the same objective. Yeah. So you just, it's like very natural. Like if you're playing to take over the board, which a lot of the time you are ideally, then you'll just get this if you're winning the game. So
Yeah, it pairs extremely well with just priority mission scoring, so why
and
not?
some, yeah, just be careful on some boards, like on Into the Dark, for instance, one of the
You talking about the
maps.
one where it's four objective markers just directly across the center line?
Yeah, so don't
That's
take it
not a real
there.
board. Yeah, don't
Yeah,
take that.
hate that board.
Yeah.
But then we just got one more left, Ryan, and that
Yeah.
is, oh God. So
Is it
here's,
even worth talking about?
I think this is the worst tag up in the game. I think this is worse than hold them back
Wow,
or
okay.
outflank. And like this one is, the more you read it, the worse it is.
All right, I'm
And it's
excited.
so hard. So basically you reveal it when you perform the action. And I'll go over the action. It's 1 AP.
So
You do it on
this
a,
is install device.
yeah, sorry, yeah, install device. It's the last one we got. So you, once you perform the install device mission action, it's basically you have to do it, it's 1 AP. While you control an objective marker in your opponent's territory or on the center line, you place the device token on the objective. If at any point an enemy operative controls that objective, you remove the token. And if the token's already down, you can't do the action. So you have to commit to one objective once you plant the token. At the end of any turning point, if it's been in the kill zone for the whole turn, you get a victory point. And then if you do that on subsequent turns, you score a victory point. So let's say you install the, you do the action on turn one. You can't even score it until turn two. And that's assuming you planted it, held the objective for all of turn one, held it for all of turn two, then you get 1 point. Then to get the other point, you need to hold it for all of turn three. If at any point your opponent takes it, if they take it on turn one, now you can't even score this until turn three because you planted it. You didn't control it for all of turn one. Or rather, you have to plant it again turn two. And then you don't control it for a whole turn until turn three, and then you can score it. It's awful. It is
Yeah.
so awful. I mean, the only benefit over Subversive here is that you can plant, you can do it on an objective
That's on
that's
the
on the
center
center
line,
line.
yeah.
But honestly, if it's on the center line, it's close to your opponent too. And it doesn't even, things only need to go a little bit wrong for like one activation,
Yeah.
and then you have like a dead tac op.
All right, so hear me out though. So that board that we were talking about with Into the Dark, where it's the four objective markers going across.
Yeah.
If you just, each one of those is a separate room. So if you just
Yes.
overload one of those rooms, I think you can score this.
You'll probably score it. Will you win the game?
Probably not.
Probably not, because you're
No.
abandoning three objectives. But
Yeah.
yeah, no, I think it's probably the worst. Just like really bad. Asks a lot of you. It's slow. But like it's slow in a way, it's not like slow like, you know, Courier, you reveal it turn three and then you can start scoring
Yeah.
it. This, like, you reveal it,
This.
ideally you're gonna reveal it turn one and then you're not even gonna score it until the end of turn
Yeah.
two.
This is the only one I think in the entire game where it's like, well, I mean, like, except for like the end game scoring tac ops, where it's like you reveal it, but you can't score it right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the other ones that are like that, it's like you usually only need to do like one thing.
Yes.
Like assassinate target. It gets revealed right away, but once you kill that guy, bam, 2 points. This, it's like you need to reveal it when you do the action. You need to hold the objective for the rest of that turn. You need to hold the objective for all of next turn. You can never lose it at any point, even for one activation. And then you can score it after all that. And then you need to hold it for a whole nother turn to get the second point. So yeah, I would advise don't take this
Yeah.
ever personally. If people are out there playing this tech op and getting points, comment. I want to hear. But yeah, that pretty much concludes the tech op deep dive here, Ryan. I hope
Yeah.
we illuminated some stuff. All we've got left today is the mailbag. We've got a couple questions in the mailbag that we're going to take. And I can pull that up right now, actually. So these questions came from Knobs and Weird Boys over at patreon.com/commandpoint. Shout out to the Patreon, everybody on the Patreon. You guys rock. Thank you for your questions. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we've only got two here that we're going to take today. The first one is, Ryan, do you want to read this first one? I don't know if you have it pulled up.
I do not have it pulled up. Let me, or I guess you can just read it.
I'll answer it,
and then you can answer it.
So this is from AB over at Patreon. Today marks 1 year, 1 week, and 1 day since Incoming was posted to the hashtag the Sacred Tier List channel on our Discord, and then silence. There have been tier lists since, but none of them have been sacred. What's wrong with tier lists today? Is the game balanced enough that it's more of a don't play these teams if you want to win list, or is it so unbalanced that it's more of a play one of these few teams if you want to win? What dimensions are tier lists missing today? So I will say I just am lazy and I haven't been posting our tier lists onto the Discord because I want people to watch the videos. But yeah. I think there's a good question in here. So I mean, I would say that to answer the question of like, is the game balanced enough that it's more of a don't play these teams if you want to win list? I think it's the tiers right now are, you mentioned earlier, Ryan, most of it, aside from a few teams at the top and like a couple teams at the very bottom, is pretty balanced right now. And I would advise, my big takeaway, I think, that I've come to grips with lately is don't pick a team because it counters something else. Unless you're playing Commandos, you're not going to pick a team that doesn't have a bad matchup. Now, I do think that there is some level of, if you're playing a team that's not an A tier or higher, you're probably not super duper serious about winning, honestly, at the end of it. Or maybe like you are serious about winning, but it's like you're not as serious as you could be. You know what I mean? I think the most important thing is to pick one of those good teams if you're trying to win a tournament, those teams in A tier or S tier, and get good at them. Rather than jumping to whatever you think is like counter meta or something, or whatever the best team is right now, because you're going to have bad matchups no matter what. And what's going to matter the most is your skill on that team paired with how good that team actually is. Luckily, I think there's a lot of teams that fit into the category of good right now, like A and S tier. I think our last tier list had like 10 teams in that range, right?
Very top heavy, it feels like.
Yeah, so I mean, I hope that, Ryan, did you want to add anything to this?
I mean, yeah, you know, the team or kill team itself has a lot more teams in it that are very good than I would say are mid or bad. So I think it's more like, I'm trying to remember like the phrasing of the original question, but yeah, that's how I feel about it. There's a lot of good teams out there, and there's so many teams that are very well balanced. It's not a don't play these factions if you don't want to win, or a take these factions if you want to win, because you have a lot of choice in the amount of factions in the pool of winning factions. There's a lot in there right now for you to pick.
Yeah, I would agree. And then the second question, last question we're going to take here today from Bob Fleck. What parts of the game would you adjust in a new edition of Kill Team?
I have one off rip. Ooh, buddy.
Go for it.
Yeah. So the rolling off for initiative every single turn, I think, is stupid and dumb. And it should just be you roll off for initiative turn one. Whoever wins the roll off has initiative. And then it just alternates for the rest of the game. It allows both players to formulate game plans from, you know, turn to turn. And that way it takes out an element of randomness that is basically uncontrollable for the most part, unless you get lucky or if you're, like, playing Vetguard and you have a chronometer. And I think there's like one other team that can Kasterkin. Kasterkin for one CP, they can reroll their initiative die, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that mechanic is silly and we can evolve past it.
I agree with that completely. I think there's too many games at the high level that are won and determined by who gets initiative on turn two and three.
Yep.
That's the most common thing I see when I talk to players about really close games about what swung it. So yeah, get rid of that. And the only thing I would change off the top of my head, and I say this as an elite player, I've played Legionaries for a long time, I would like to see Overwatch made better. I don't know how you would do it. For starters, I mean, like, let me fight. Like, if a guardsman charges my guy, I can't do anything now, like, when it's my turn to Overwatch. You know, I think Overwatch struggling is, like, is a big reason why elites aren't, like, are kind of capped in terms of how good they can be. I think there's, like, a lot of ways you can make that mechanic better. And I would start there, personally, if I'm trying to fix elites. So, yeah, those are our main two.
Good questions.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Obviously, we're going to start doing the Patreon mailbag segment every podcast. So if you're a knob or a weird boy tier on the Patreon, you can go and ask questions once we make those posts. So keep an eye out for those. And Ryan, do you want to do our outro here?
Yeah, sure. So thank you guys all for tuning in to another episode of the Command Point Podcast, episode 58. Thank you guys for all tuning in and watching on YouTube. If you are watching on YouTube and you're not already subscribed, please do. Make sure to like the video and leave a comment down in the comment section below if you have any questions or anything you want to talk about that you saw in today's episode. If you are listening to us on any sort of like podcasting app, Spotify or Apple Music, stuff like that, go ahead and subscribe to us there so you can keep up to date with all of our latest podcast episodes. If you want to support us further, like Shane said, you can go ahead and check out our Patreon. We have tiers at $1, $4, and $6 US. I mean, like, every little bit helps in terms of us being able to produce this quality kill team content for you guys. Last thing is our Discord server, which recently got a huge boost, actually. There's a ton of people in there talking about kill team. There's over 3,000 people in there all talking about kill team, all playing games of kill team. It's where we run the CPS tournaments. And all sorts of stuff like that. So make sure to check that out. And I've got links to all those in the description down below. But yeah, thank you guys for watching and listening in. And we'll see you all again in the next one.
See you later.